meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in on this beautiful Wednesday here. Father Tom Coy's with you to wrinkle your brain a little bit. And we are still in the middle of our lockdown pandemic, praying.
No!
I think that's how we all feel these days, isn't it?
When will this mad whirlwind existence ever stop?
Well, if you're listening to the governor, he's laying out a plan for up to 18 months. This is not good, my friends. We got to kick around a few ideas here, and we have to toughen up a little bit in a crisis. Somewhere along the line, the toughening up might not just be shutting up or staying. Quiet or staying hunkered down, as it were. So actually, we have with us here today one of my great heroes. I've had Seamus on before, and now he's with us telephonically. He's the Seamus Coughlin now. Before, he was just Seamus Coughlin, but he's the Seamus Coughlin. Can you hear me there, Mr. Coughlin?
Hello? Yeah, you cut out for a second there, but I can hear you now. How's it going, Father Tom?
It's going. It's going. I'm telling everyone I'm tired of thinking.
I've been there. Is that a recent development for you? Because for me, it's just been exhausting all the time.
It truly is.
That's why I make cartoons, Father. It's why I went into animation. It's just thinking is not my strong suit.
Yeah. Well, let me. Maybe two of us together, we can come up with some fine little points. You know,
rub some of our brain cells together.
Exactly, and I got to share with you. This is breaking news because we really need to address the idea of where religious freedom kicks in terms of. A practice of our church life, as it were. So, but this is from a tweet or an email from one of the Illinois senators, Dan McCauchy, and he's spelling out what Governor Pritzker has laid out today, or I don't know if maybe it was yesterday. I just want to read this, and let's get some reaction. Let's start it off as part of our discussion here. But I'm going to tease my audience. I do want to play some of your freedom tunes.
Is that allowed on air, Father?
How's that?
Is that allowed on air? I don't want to get you excommunicated.
Yeah. Well, I picked out some fine ones that that I think that you bleep out where a bad word could be used, a more family friendly word is used.
Yeah, I'm being facetious. We actually don't use bad language in the Freedom Tunes videos. I think there were some early on where I did, but I've really avoided that.
Yeah. Well, there's always a good angle that needs to be appreciated a little bit more. Anyway, so we're gonna get to those. If you haven't discovered Freedom Tunes, my faithful listeners, you gotta just Google Freedom Tunes on YouTube and watch little snippets, 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Except for a thing called debunkers, those could go longer.
Yeah, those will last a little bit longer.
That'd be, but always worth the listen. Okay, so this is from Senator McCaughey, and he's saying, finally, our governor has released a plan for reopening Illinois. I applaud him for doing so.
Yeah, thank goodness.
At first, I was happy for a plan. Then I read the details.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It's okay. Where the devil is.
Then the details. This is a 12-month stay-at-home plan.
That's insane.
He's just
12 months?
Here's a few of the details and what Senator McCaughey says are difficulties, and let's see if we agree. Number one, opening up the state will happen by regions, but the regions are way too big. New York State has 10 regions. Illinois is only divided into 4 regions. So that means McHenry County will be treated exactly the same as downtown Chicago.
Yeah.
What sense does that make? Number two.
No sense.
Yeah. There is a minimum of 28 days between changes in the 5 different phases. That's a whole month between the phases. Double.
Who says the government's slow moving?
Right. This is rapid fire. Yeah. Well, 20. So in other words, 5 phases, and each phase will have to be at least 28 days. It's very scary, as it were. Number three, discrimination between retail shops continues. In other words, you can go to Target and buy furniture, Walmart and buy clothing, and grocery stores to buy flowers, but you can't go in a furniture store or a clothing store or a florist, regardless of
that. Yeah. And isn't it funny how the big chain stores all benefit from this?
They certainly are. They, number one, they got the reserves to weather the storm, and they got sometimes bigger square footage. But I don't know about you. I've bought a number of things where you jump online and you drive there and they throw it in the car for you. That's certainly a local florist can do the same as. Although a local florist may not have the online reach that a big place would have, of course.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah, the big box stores have, which we've gotten used to thinking of them as somewhat enemies, are now the heroes.
Mm-hmm.
The little people we gotta understand. So that relates, by the way, to one of my favorite Freedom Tunes about income equality. Maybe we'll get.
Yeah, that was a while ago. I remember. Yeah, it was like 2015, 2016.
Is that
how
right?
How things have changed since then?
Even more so. Okay, so this is Governor McCaughey goes on. Not Governor, Senator. This is killing small businesses and is resulting in an unnecessary loss of jobs and businesses.
It's true. So not only is it, I think, really unfair and insane that only big chain stores are allowed to stay open and the little guy gets shut down, but if you actually look at the bailout, there's good reason to believe it's going to lead to massive corporate consolidation, because the Small Business Administration is supposed to be giving out the bailout money that goes towards the small businesses as opposed to the Federal Reserve. And they're used to handling about a tenth of the amount of money that they have to dish out over the course of a year. And now they've only got a couple weeks to get it to everybody. So most small businesses, or I shouldn't say most, but a great number of small businesses won't be getting the money they need. There's also going to be a lot of fraud with bigger businesses applying for money that's supposed to be going to small businesses. And then as these small businesses close down, big businesses are going to be able to swoop in with the $4.2 trillion in low-interest loans they got from the Federal Reserve and buy up all their assets. So it looks like this whole thing has turned into a massive handout to big corporations and to big government, unfortunately. And that's not to say that the disease isn't a real threat that we shouldn't take seriously, but I just find it interesting that every single time there is a threat, the people in power use it to take more power for themselves and their friends.
That's, yeah. It, I wasn't around in the 1920s, the 1930s, you know, but it's looking like that time before the Great Depression came crashing down, you know. And if we're not careful, if we just keep this attitude toward people's jobs and businesses, it seems like we're going to create the 1930s. In the desire to save lives.
And, yeah. Well, it's complicated because people seem to fail to recognize that there are trade-offs here. No matter what we do, there are going to be lives lost. It's a question of what's going to save the most people. You shut down the economy completely, and the reality of the situation is poverty does kill. And I think the left is perfectly capable of seeing this anytime we discuss rolling back any kind of social spending. But then when it comes to shutting down the economy for three straight months, they suddenly think people are immune to the effects of poverty. It's very strange.
And it's hard for me to listen to people who have been so staunch defenders of abortion rights coming up and saying how they are only trying to save lives, and then saving lives is their first priority. I think it's got to be some kind of psychological guilt complex. They've been living with a bit of a guilt complex by having to defend themselves. They know they're not really for life in the womb, and they say to those people who are quote pro-life, you don't really understand what life is. We're for protecting life after birth, and you're just concentrating on life before birth. So this...
Yeah, and it's funny because... Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I'm just saying this is... it's a healing process for their conscience in that sense.
I think their father...
Oh, you just wrinkled my brain, man.
So one thing that I find really interesting, too, is the fact that oftentimes pro-choice arguments come from a place of economic pragmatism, supposedly. They'll say things like, well, we just can't afford all of the unwanted children in the world. But then when there's this pandemic, they say, well, I don't care what economic effects there are. If we save just one life, it'll be worth it. It's like, all right, could you apply that in other places, please?
Yeah. Oh, gosh, that's a good angle. Here's the fourth point of... The Senator McCutcheon, he says, you want a haircut? You'll have to wait until at least June, regardless of the array of protocols that could be put in place to maintain safety.
That drives me crazy. That's so unbelievably dismissive. The fact that this is all boiled down to people wanting haircuts, this is something that we've seen people in favor of the lockdown say repeatedly.
Yeah.
No, anyone who thinks that this is an overreaction, just wants to go out and get their hair cut. Well, I don't know. Maybe they want to have a job 3 months from now. Maybe it's that. Maybe they want to be able to provide for their family. Maybe they're afraid of the economic ramifications of shutting down the global economy for three straight months. Maybe it's not as simple as them wanting to get their hair cut. I don't know. But
I like the sense that there's all jobs are essential for the person who has the job.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, the government coming in and saying which jobs are essential and which aren't is, by definition, central planning.
Yeah. You might be able to analyze different kinds of work and say that some work doesn't contribute to the overall. I'm just going to throw out the oldest profession in the world, let us say. Let us say a woman of the streets is doing her darndest to make money. I could understand saying that that's not an essential part of the economy. And
I would agree.
That kind of money could be
there. Yeah.
Could go someplace else, you know. Let us say you had a business where you sold pet rocks. Say, okay. If you're going to set it up for a few
months. Or you were a cartoonist.
Well, no, that might be essential because that might be. Yeah. Well, and or priest, the church. Yeah. We got to let's finish these little points from Senator Kachin, and I want to tackle the essential nature of church activity. Mm-hmm. It's hard to swallow the fact that we're lower than haircutting.
Liquor stores and abortion clinics.
Yeah, bingo. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I was tempted. I almost put up a sign saying abortion clinic here. We're open.
Oh, my goodness. maybe then they looked the other way.
The church, right? And then people, when they would come in, we'd say, we definitely will have our meeting with you.
If you put abortion clinic out front, people wouldn't be as upset about your tax-exempt status. They might even lobby the government to send you money.
Exactly. Oh, it's a crazy world. Okay, number five. Lack of full transparency. There are many aspects of the data and science the governor is using to justify his decision, making that is still unknown. So I guess what the senator is saying, he's using scientific data, but the data is, the jury is still out on a lot of data. And depending on what data you collect, obviously, it makes it a relative subjective decision in that sense. Number six, getting to full opening will take 9 to 15 months, which means he will need to continually issue emergency declarations to see the plan through, each of which grants him virtually unlimited authority for the 30 days each one is in effect. So if there's five phases of 30 days each, that's almost a year, my friends. It hurts. Number seven.
Yep.
There is a zero oversight of his actions by any legislative branch of government. He is not an autocrat. He should be subject to oversight and not simply limited by his own whims. It is beyond time that legislative leaders call us back to session and put this right.
This whole thing is really complicated. I mean, I'm certainly not an expert on disease control. I think a good bit about economics, but I'm not formally educated in it. So I can't sit here and prescribe policy. But what I can tell you is we're definitely at the risk of overreacting if we haven't overreacted already. And the concerns of people who want to open the economy back up need to be taken seriously instead of just brushed aside. And so often that's what's done. We say, oh, they want to sacrifice grandma to Wall Street. Going back to what we said earlier, they just want a haircut. But there are some real serious reasons to believe that this shutdown is going to do more harm than good. For example, the UN has said that there are 130 million people in the world now at risk for acute malnutrition or starvation who weren't prior to the shutdown because we're not producing as much food or we're not distributing it as well as a result of the shutdown. So, yeah, I mean, this is having massive costs that people aren't really taking seriously enough.
Yeah. When we come back from a break, I want to throw a biblical perspective on this in a certain sense that I really think we should take seriously.
We need one.
Yeah. It's definitely time to get serious with our Lord and with the risks that are involved and we need to man up, as it were, one way or another.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Indeed, this is a brain wrinkling hour. I am Father Tom Coyes, and I'm with the Seamus Coughlin of Freedom Tunes, and we're talking religious freedom and the pandemic. We'll be right back. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy with us at 3 p.m. Central Time. Streamed live from St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Go to the St. Stanislaus Kostka Church Facebook page and pray with us daily at 3 p.m.
Have mercy on us and on the whole world.
during this COVID-19 virus pandemic, offering you prayer and inspiration through your faith.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Friday, the coronavirus has prompted governments around the world to implement measures that in many cases have never been seen before in order to try and control the pandemic. But at what cost to religious freedom?
At what cost indeed? Sunday church services are considered non-essential, which we cannot attend while we go to an essential Home Depot and buy that essential screwdriver while maintaining a social distance. And yet, our religious freedom is enshrined as a first freedom in the U.S. Constitution. So how is it that Sunday liturgies can be relegated to non-essential status by a group of certain governors never letting a crisis go to waste? Make no mistake, our religious liberties are being usurped. Winds of Change will be periodically discussing how we can begin to take back our religious liberty while keeping each other safe.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. It is a challenge, and we can meet the challenge with wisdom, with courage of virtues, and compassion, and all the... I like the way G.K. Chesterton speaks about the virtuous life. It's a combination of a lot of virtues that have to be worked together and live and managed together and used together. As a matter of fact, Chesterton says, if you focus only on one virtue, you turn into the maniac. Many times the maniac will be right about one thing, but completely wrong about many other things. And that's the Aristotelian Thomistic sense of the virtue of prudence, by being able to manage the other virtues in the real-life situation. So we're being tested in that. Seamus, the thing the biblical perspective that I want to share is when thinking about the Old Testament, I've often felt a little bit sorry when the Bible says things like that God was using the Babylonians to punish the Israelites. Number one, I feel sorry for the Israelites because they're being punished, but I also, in a sense, feel sorry for the Babylonians. They may not know they're being used by God to punish, but that's the way the Bible presents at times the chastisements on the people of Israel.
And, yeah, well, I know God's using me for penance.
You just hang around Freedom Tunes for a while, and you'll feel the the healing balm of penance. but people can be used by God to a purpose that they don't really want is one thing, or that the evil spirits can use people and turn them to do things that, and in some ways, that's in one way how I could find myself being compassionate for those who are so very frustrating in this realm. I say, okay, they don't know they're being used by an evil spirit, but they are being used by an evil spirit. And that's why our prayer life, that's why our being in a state of grace, that's why our appreciation of the supernatural battles that are going on, unknowns to us, have to be especially appreciated, right? That even a good person can be taken over by a bad spirit, and be used against their will by an evil spirit, or even by, I guess, if we're being used by God for something, but we're, let us say we are the Babylonians who are attacking the Israelites. They just think they're beating up their enemy. You know, they're happy to do it, so to speak. the Babylonians, that is.
Yeah.
And God's hand is not seen in their mind. God's hand might be seen in the minds of the Israelites, who are saying, especially through the prophets, "Hey, wait a minute, wake up. We're being punished by God. Let's turn back to the Lord, and the Babylonians will stop beating us up."
Yep.
In some way. So that's kind of a biblical twist to our crazy situation of today.
Yeah, I definitely can't write that off, Father. There's a saying I heard from a priest. He said something like, if God doesn't chastise America, he owes Sodom and Gomorrah an apology, something like that. I mean, this country has gone completely off the deep end in so many ways. To think that, you know, we're immune from the consequences that our actions would naturally bring about, let alone divine consequences, is completely naive, I think.
Right. And that's where when something's a sin and we know it's a sin and we call it a sin and we try to overcome it, you know, as an immoral aspect, that's one thing. But then when laws start declaring what God has declared wrong as a right,
that's right,
that reaches a different level. And of course there's a lot of priests and even bishops who are saying, well, God doesn't declare sexual sins. That's
I don't know how you could possibly say that.
Yeah,
I don't know how you could possibly say that.
Yeah, it's a mystery. There's got to be the psychological explanation of self-defense and
even if you don't really believe in the message of Jesus Christ or in the Catholic Church and Scripture, but I repeat myself, you at least have to realize that there are clear condemnations of immoral sexual activity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this might be a good place to throw in a treat to our listeners, because one of my favorite Freedom Tunes is the little skit you put together about bringing back the Nazis to fight the war. I hope the people could follow along. I'll try to give it a commentary, because you'll hear obviously this is radio, and the scene is set with your little cartoon characters and these three with it teenagers, I'll call it that, so to speak, are in a scientific laboratory where they created a time machine. And so one of the words that's a little bit challenging, well, you'll hear, and I'll give it a little bit of a commentary. It goes like this, friends. This is what starts with Freedom Tunes.
So, as you know, Nazism is on the rise, and we need to stop them, which is why I've invented a time machine to bring back the people who defeated Nazism in the first place.
Perfect!
Yes!
Hey, this ain't Normandy.
Now three what soldiers gives? Appear.
What year is it?
It's 2018!
Why did you say that so weird?
Sorry, force of habit. We brought you to the future because Nazism is on the rise in the U.S., and our president is sympathetic to them!
What?
Here's a pamphlet with all his positions.
This fella's disgusting.
Right?
This boy thinks two men can get married.
What?
And that a man who cuts his dongle off is a woman?
Sounds more like a commie to me, but hey, same difference. I'll kill either one.
That's not what's bad about him.
It gets worse. What else are these Nazis doing?
They believe there are only two genders.
Well, of course there's more than two genders.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, the Russians have their gender, the Germans have their gender, the Japanese have their gender, everybody's got an agenda.
No, not agenda, gender.
What the hell is gender?
Sounds like some kind of phony word popularized in the 50s to create a false distinction between one identity and their biological sex. Am I in the ballpark here?
Your sex is whether you're male or female, but your gender is how you identify. So if you were born a man but want to become a woman, your gender identity is as a woman, and you therefore are a woman.
You know what?
So you guys think men can be women?
Well, that's the biggest crock of nonsense I ever heard.
Yeah, none of this sounds like Nazism to me.
Well, how about this? He wants people to pay for their own birth control. control.
Oh, no. Yeah. Birth control is legal?
The guys who defeated Nazism are such Nazis.
You know, I don't like you pinkos going around telling people you're fighting Nazis just because you berate everyone you disagree with. You've never fought a Nazi in your life, and to claim otherwise is stolen valor.
Yeah, and you know what? When actual Nazis come around, no one's gonna want to fight them anymore, because you guys keep crying wolf.
Now let's go back and win ourselves a war!
You know, I almost don't want to anymore.
Wait!
Don't go! We need you!
We need to say you're on our side so we can convince the greater whole of society to accept violence against dissidents who stand in the way of the social order we seek to establish.
And how exactly are they the Nazis?
Because I call them Nazis.
Well, you call men women, so...
I think that's a classic, Seamus.
Thank you, Father. I appreciate that.
It's, for those who haven't seen it, the three teenagers, one of them has purple hair, you know, shaved half off, you know, just like she's really at the cutting edge of fashion, right? Gives you a little sense of the visuals there.
It's amazing how much you can learn about a person's political identity by their hair, Father.
That's right. We are very astute.
That's why we want haircuts so bad.
Indeed. How do you get all those voices? Are some of those, they don't know. I know you do a lot of the voices, but you use other people, right?
There was myself and then there were three other voice actors. There was Eric July, who's great. I try to bring him on as often as possible. And then there was also Julie Borowski. And a friend of mine named Sahara. I voiced three characters, and then they voiced the other three.
Yeah, yeah, that's very clever. Just to let our listeners know too that every now and then you'll do an interview, you take calls from your subscribers and all. And
yeah.
One of the things that made me laugh is I was watching. Everybody likes you to say. They say. Do Joe Biden, do Trump, do the imitation, it's multi-talented there. And not only do you got to have a good script, and you got to have a lot of artists working. You got to practice those voices.
You're far too kind, Father.
That's the way. So, getting back to the topic of the day, this religious freedom thing, and Are we an essential activity? You got to be able to say yes, and us church people, we got to say, well, yeah, and we don't want to spread the virus. Let's do what all the other essential activities are doing, in one way or another. Social distancing, wearing masks, wiping pews down. What I find most illogical is saying that you can have 10 people or less in a church. Mm-hmm. Anybody knows that churches come in a variety of sizes.
Yeah, exactly.
And to say that a small church can have 10 and a huge big church can have 10, it's just illogical.
Yeah, some kind of number of people per pew standard would definitely make a lot more sense than that, than just some blanket number to throw on all churches.
Yeah, see how many people you can fit in your church with social distancing, mm-hmm. you know? My church happens to be a small church, and I wouldn't be able to get that many in, but a larger church can get a lot more in.
Absolutely.
And here's another thing. One of the great lines came from Dr. Carlson. For those of you who remember, he was a black doctor who ran for president a bit. And he's now working in the Trump administration in the Health and Human Service Department. And his line is just very simple. When we're talking about the rights of everything, he said, you know, we have a right to take a risk.
Mm-hmm.
You have a right to take a risk, and obviously, They would say, well, you have a right to take a risk for yourself, but you don't have a right to risk other people's lives. But those who would be in a church service are all, in a certain sense, joining together and saying, we are willing to take a risk together to pray, to pray together.
Yeah.
And that that sense of being able to risk, it's also so contrary to so many people who are opposed to, I got to use this example. Many times I try to dissuade people from using artificial contraception because there's a risk of getting cancer. There's mm-hmm. a risk of getting other diseases.
And losing your salvation.
Not to mention going into more sin.
Yeah, yeah.
There's that. And yet, of course, people are willing to take that risk
mm-hmm.
Because the payoff is something they would consider as essential to life.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're saying you can't take a risk, and the risk has got to be getting smaller and smaller in this time.
It's hard for me to comment on what the actual risk is at this point, because again, I don't know a whole lot about disease, but I think there's something interesting about the fact that there are many other stores and the public institutions which are open and churches aren't. And in the Catholic Church, at least, that's in part due to the fact that I think the hierarchy itself has just willingly closed these churches, which is its own can of worms to open up.
Yeah.
Wow.
I would like...
But there is one thing I want to say.
Oh.
Well,
yes,
for however people feel about the fact that the bishops have basically closed the churches, I'm certainly not happy with it. But I will say this. I'm very happy that... It's just been incredible to see the response of the average Catholic, at least Catholics that I know. You can tell the sacraments are a very important part of their life based on how they're responding to this. And so hopefully, our voices can be heard in this way and people can start going back and getting in the pews, receiving the sacraments, the sacraments they need for their salvation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's with that understanding of one, it may be a risk. Number two, you protect yourself as best. I wish I, as a priest, would have one of those masks that the doctors wear. they wear their little hat and the plastic shield goes over their face. And,
oh yeah, yeah.
You know, I wouldn't mind. You know, let's do something like that. And if the doctor could feel pretty much safe and protected by putting on such gear, then certainly I could feel that way too. But of course, you might say, "Well, that's just you, the priest, up there on the altar. What about everybody sitting next to each other?" Everybody.
Well, those people. I mean, again, those people are choosing to be at the church, and also there can still be some distancing protocols put in effect by individual churches that people put some distance between themselves so that, you know, the disease doesn't spread as easily. But unfortunately, it's been made this end-all be-all situation where either we completely close the churches or we allow this disease to spread. I said, well, no, there's somewhere in between those two things.
Exactly. So, well, Nick wants us to take another little break here with some great
sure.
Messages and everything. Can you hang on for yet a little bit more of their
absolutely.
I know you got a busy day and... but let's
try
it again.
I do, but Father Tom has absolved more than a few of my sins, so I'm more than happy to stay on the line for you.
Hey, take one for the team here. Listen, I'm Father Tom Coyce. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Because of the unprecedented COVID-19 virus pandemic, the Providence Soup Kitchen at St. Stan's needs your immediate help. The Soup Kitchen is asking for your donations of water, juice boxes, individual food servings, hand sanitizers, and Lysol. The Providence Soup Kitchen at St. Stan's is operating regular hours during this pandemic. The Soup Kitchen is operated by the Daughters of St. Mary Providence from the basement of St. Stanislaus Kloska Church, which serves over 21,000 meals per year. To offer your help, please call Sister Darlene at 773-870-2435. That number again is 773-870-2435. Thank you. During this COVID-19 virus pandemic, offering you prayer and inspiration through your faith.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy with us at 3 p.m. Central Time. Streamed live from St. Stanislaus Kloska Church, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Go to the St. Stanislaus Kloska Church Facebook page and pray with us daily at 3 p.m.
Have mercy on us and on the whole world.
As we sit home or are doing the necessary and often courageous jobs for your family and others, Father Anthony invites you to be with us Sundays, where you will see the English, Spanish, and Polish Masses on the St. Stanislaus Kloska Facebook homepage. St. Stanislaus Kloska Church will keep you updated via flocknote.com or by texting the word Kloska, spelled K-O-S-T-K-A, to 845-76, or via the St. Stanislaus Kloska homepage on Facebook, plus the parish website, ststanschurch.org. Keep listening for more information on Winds of Change, Monday through Friday at noon on AM 750. As always, we ask you to lift your voice to God, our rock and our shelter.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coyce here with you, and wrinkling your brain a bit with Seamus Coughlin of Freedom Tunes fame. I've been wanting to say that for a while, Seamus, just so you get that there.
That's very kind of you, Father.
Indeed. One aspect that I maybe could share with that, besides the same old, we're just... I'm running out of new things to say about this pandemic that's gone into 3 months. One of the things that maybe I haven't talked about is it's what it's teaching me about myself and my parishioners.
Yeah.
People in general in relationship. Let me start with myself. I can't help but say this, is that in a lot of this, I don't feel like myself. I don't.
Why do you say that?
I don't. Because my normal self is to welcome people when I see them coming to church.
Oh, okay.
I like to say, "Hey, good to see you. Glad we try real hard at our little St. James parish to get people to know each other and mingle and." Through our coffee clutches and our meetings and our adult education things, you know. But here now I'm sort of being forced to say, nope, you can't go into church. It hurts to lock a church when somebody wants to go
in.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
It just kills me. And then you become short with people. You're more quick to say something that you might not normally say, because you have this inner frustration or this anxiety apart. So that's one thing. Another thing is in analyzing my people, I realize if there were a war situation, and I do think this is somewhat of a war, this is a kind of a war situation, but if it was in your typical classical war where an enemy was, our populace is kind of chicken.
you don't say.
They're chicken and they're disobedient.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, and the two characteristics of it.
I don't know.
Yeah, the you to win a war, you're gonna have to learn obedience to the generals, and you're gonna have to have a certain kind of courage. And so I guess some people are obediently doing everything they're told to do, but a lot of people are very disobedient.
That's the truth, yeah.
And that's a little strange.
I mean, the culture really encourages it, right? Like the rebels and the revolutionaries are always sort of put on a pedestal, and then people who do what they're supposed to do are more or less mocked.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes I've used the phrase, if I am caught in an act of disobedience, I think, well, I learned from a lot of my leaders, because at one time we weren't supposed to have girls serving on the altar, and everybody disobeyed that rule.
Yeah, girl altar boys. Yeah.
Girl altar boys. So I learned disobedience from my beloved leaders, in that sense. Or to be obedient to the church would mean not to be using artificial contraception, but that's clearly if there's ever a activity that's disobedient, but you get a wink, wink, nod, nod, it's that. So there's that kind of disobedience. So to disobey in one little way or another, and here's another thing on human nature, even the good people who want church, and if we have just a couple of people at Mass, you know, for the live streaming with a camera, just a couple of people, people will fight others for that position.
For the camera?
To get into the church.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Instead
of like a virtuous act might be, well, Father says we could only have 10 people in the church. I'd be the 10th one to go in, but you take my spot. You know, that could be a virtuous act. But I don't see a lot of that happening.
Yeah.
You know, you take my spot.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And so only so much room on the lifeboats, Father. You got to hop in. They're only letting 10 people in the church. I'm getting the sacrament. That's a complicated one, though, because there's sort of that question. Like, you know, if you're in line for confession, there's only time for a priest to hear one more person's confession. Do you really let somebody cut you? Like, that would be an act of charity for that other person, but ultimately, aren't you most responsible for your own soul?
That complicates it, all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you have the responsibility of saying, okay, when can I catch you again? Which is hard. And I that's something I really realize. It's hard to find a priest. To find a priest, and it's even harder now. So
unfortunately it is.
Well, let me share another little clip from Freedom Tunes, because this role, it's not on the pandemic at this time, but another one of my favorite ones, and you do a pretty good job at trying to tackle a very difficult topic, and that is poverty, the rich, the class struggle. Obviously,
yeah.
It's as historical proportions, right?
And this is the income inequality video?
There's one on income inequality. And and this is the three millionaires.
Yes, this is an old one.
The three millionaires talking with the interviewer, which happens to be a little cartoon character that looks a lot like Mr. Seamus Coughlin.
It's almost like I'm a narcissist or something, Father.
Yeah. No, the cartoon character is such that you wouldn't be accused of being called a narcissist.
Accurate. It actually looks like me.
It's enough of a lampoon.
Exactly.
to help the listeners know what I'm talking about, your character is not Superman-ish. with a big chest and muscles, you know.
And I don't know. I thought it looked pretty heroic with the gigantic hair. People understand where I'm coming from with all the haircut rhetoric after they watch this one.
Yeah, that's true. The body is a pencil thin, however, you know, it doesn't have bulging muscles.
Gotta be true to life, Father. You know, people wouldn't view me as credible if I depicted myself any other way.
Yeah, you know, to know you in reality is to see those muscles bulging out. You know, that's what I'm talking about. Okay, but here we are setting the scene. You're trying to tackle a very challenging issue. And here's how it goes. Let's see if I can get it here.
Yeah, this one might be hard.
Oh, aren't you the 1%?
No, the 1%.
Let's back it up here again.
Oh, we are owed.
Indeed. What are you guys protesting?
The 1%.
Aren't you the 1%?
No, the 1% of the 1%. We're millionaires, but they're billionaires. Billionaires, I say. Stop hoarding your money.
Yes, give us some.
No.
Work hard for it, like we did.
It's not fair. They have so much more money.
I mean, all things considered, so do you guys. Maybe you should count your blessings?
That's right. Listen to the boy. You've just been brainwashed by the Fox News into taking that attitude. They should be giving us what's rightfully ours.
But you have everything you need to survive and then some.
Yes, but I only have 3 aughts. Keep your money-grubbing hands away from my hard-earned yachts. What makes you think you deserve more yachts than I?
Look, dude, I don't like that they're hoarding their money any more than you do. But if you want them to be more generous, well, set an example. If you were truly protesting wealth inequality from a place of compassion and not from a place of greed, well, why don't you give your money to those in need? You could really make a difference. There are a lot of people in the world with a lot less than you.
People in the world with less than us? Is he deaf? You mean to tell me there's people who have less than 3 yachts?
A few, yeah.
Outrageous. They should be given yachts as well. All the more reason we need these billionaires to chip in, I say. Yachts are a human right.
Yachts are not a human right.
I say, you wish to take our yachts away? Have you no compassion?
Do you know how insane you sound? Not everything you want is a human right. Are you seriously so spoiled that you don't see how rich you truly are compared to the rest of the world? If you want to help the poor, go help them. But stop scapegoating the small minority of people in the world who happen to have more than you do.
Are you saying you don't want to help the poor?
And so,
hey guys, thanks for watching. I'm gonna put.
Do you remember that one?
So, yeah, I do. So for people who couldn't see the visuals, what happens at the end is the millionaires just turn into regular-looking people, and I have a graphic on the screen which says that if you make more than $30,000 a year, you're in the top 1% of the world economy. And so the point with that cartoon was to demonstrate that I think middle-class Americans complaining about the upper class having too much is a little bit tone deaf and ridiculous when you look at the world and economics from a global scale.
Right.
And it's funny because the idea of millionaires, and it's not to say, the point of the cartoon certainly is to say that there aren't serious problems with wealth inequality or that the poor are being perfectly taken care of and there's nothing to complain about. In fact, I think my character says specifically, like, I don't like them hoarding money any more than you do. But,
yeah,
you know, be the change you want to see in the world. And if you're a middle-class person, you're making more than most of the people in the entire world, and you could be doing something to help them. And if you're not, then don't rack your brain wondering why millionaires aren't doing more. It's like you aren't either when you're in a position to help. And it's funny because I did this as a parody. Like, I thought it was so patently ridiculous to show a millionaire complaining about billionaires. But here we are in 2020, and Bernie Sanders is a millionaire who is literally complaining about billionaires. And he has millions of fans. So it gets more and more difficult with each day to tell the difference between parody and reality.
Yeah. The great line, the line that I think is the heart of that is if you want to help, if you try to help the poor from a perspective of compassion as opposed to greed, then do it. But that, that greed is the out, greed knows no class distinction in a certain sense. You can be greedy,
exactly.
A greedy poor person.
Exactly. Well, because another big part of this is that I think whenever anyone is protesting any kind of equality, they can be coming at it from one of those two places. We view protests of inequality as being inherently noble, and it can be noble when what you're saying is, I want the people beneath me to be helped. But oftentimes what people are saying is, I don't want anyone to be above me. And I don't think there's any virtue in that at all. And also, one thing people will say, too, is that, like, you know, in the Bible, Jesus sort of condemns the rich when he says it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. But, of course, right after that, he says all things are possible through God, and that's more or less left out. But when people read that and they think that Jesus is, you know, talking about the millionaires and billionaires of today, and they don't realize that he's also referring to them, given that, you know, even the poor and the middle class in the United States of America live better lives than kings did historically, they're really missing the point. I mean, yeah. when Jesus said it's difficult for a rich person to get to heaven, he's talking about all of us. He's talking about basically every American. You live in the richest country on the planet.
Yeah. Another great line in that little snippet was, yachts are a human right. You know. And
that's how I feel when people say college is a human right. It's like, what are you talking? Like, college is, because in many ways, college has sort of become like a luxury for middle class people. And part of that is because, I mean, according to the National Bureau for Economic Research, the government responds to federally guaranteed student loans by increasing tuition. So that's not too controversial to say. I believe the government is the cause of the college tuition crisis. Like, but even so, a college degree can be immensely helpful, but to say that it's a human right and that taxes need to pay for it, well, I mean, first of all, government involvement drove the price up in the first place, so there's no reason to believe it wouldn't just continue to do that and make college even less accessible, and we'd rack up all sorts of debt. It just seems like a trivial, it seems like kind of a trivial thing to say, like the government has to pay for you.
Indeed.
Especially because you end up making so much more money when you go, but I could spend a while on this point.
Yeah. And I've often thought that ticket prices for sporting events are way too high. And if this pandemic might have some effect on that, that could be a good thing. How are we going to enjoy? I like sports, and but how can we get it down somehow?
This is interesting because sort of what we're talking about with human rights almost ropes back to this discussion that we were having earlier on religious freedom. Oftentimes, especially in the United States, we use the word right to either mean I should be allowed to do this thing or this thing should be paid for. And that's not actually what a right is or what a right means. I mean, from a Catholic perspective, rights exist as a product of your duties. So, for example, you have a duty to protect yourself and your family. Therefore, you know, you have the right to own some kind of weapon to be able to do that. But, as a father, you have a duty to provide for your family. Therefore, you have a right to be able to enter into contracts to work. I mean, rights come from a place of needing to fulfill your obligations. They're not just something you're supposed to be handed to because you have a sense of entitlement.
Indeed, indeed. Well, you know, I think we're about at the end of our time. And I want to thank you, Seamus, for helping wrinkle my listeners' brains, as we do often here. Let's keep praying, my friends, and ask the good Lord for the right wisdom and the courage that is needed today. Now there's a new brand of courage. So let's pray we can do what we can.
Thank you so much, Father.
I'm Father Tom Coyes. You've been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed.
words that you say when right.